From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk words. Let's talk e-words. As we return to our series looking at the most enigmatic and evil words ever found on the SAT. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they always do, New York Times best-selling authors and language experts Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy. You are there at your home in Armenia, where it has stopped raining. I'm happy to hear that.
And we're very happy about that. I'm scraping the mildew off my body, but I'm fine.
How are you? Ross Petras, hello. You are, of course, at your home in Toronto. How's Toronto today, Ross?
It's actually cold and rainy, too, Fletcher.
Oh, so. Wow.
But we have a humidifier, so there's no mildew. Or dehumidifier.
You don't need more. You don't need more.
No, we don't need more.
Well, today we are headed back to the alphabet, to the hardest words from the SATs. And we have moved on to the letter E today. I know, though, that the two of you had something else you wanted to talk about before we jump into that.
Yeah, this one was actually fun. It's an email, and it's something I know I've wondered about. Ross, you wondered about it as well, didn't you? We talked about it. Yeah,
and we were talking about one aspect of this, but we'll get into that aspect as soon as Kathy finishes the email part.
Okay, it's Lee from San Diego wrote, I saw a post from a friend on Facebook talking about how her cat had gained 12 pounds, and she used what we always call the pound sign, then parenthetically, yes, I'm that old. But now they call it a hashtag. Why? What happened to pound? And why is it a hashtag? For that matter, why was it called a pound sign? Any insights?
This is something we just talked about 2 minutes ago, too, because I got a phone call and I noticed it on my iPhone. And it said, you know, the message, press the pound sign.
Sure.
And I had sort of like, I've done it. I automatically press the pound sign, which is that, you know, thingy.
Yeah, that thingy.
So I thought
it looks
what
like
she
a
said,
grid, right? It looks like a little grid, basically.
Exactly. But what really got us was Kathy and I said, like, if you're older, pound sign was everywhere. Now it basically is just, I only hear it really on your phone.
Yeah.
And I only hear it like a little bit on your, I don't really get too many voice messages on my cell phone. I get it more on my landline still.
You have a landline?
Yeah, we still do.
Oh, my heavens.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's a landline, but it's like, I mean, it's not like you pick up the, you know, it's not like wired and stuff. It's a wireless landline.
Still.
But anyway, it's just sort of a weird thing. I don't really think pound anymore at all, except because I actually slightly hesitate when they say press the pound sign, which I wouldn't have done 20 years ago, I don't think.
Okay. So when do you use the pound sign otherwise? When would you have thought about it 20 years ago either?
When you wrote about pounds, I was a temp secretary, and I remember having to do it if it was like some sort of like a charty sort of thing, and you'd have to do 20 pounds, it'd be 20.
Yeah, I remember
hashtag.
That too.
Wait, like for weight?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I've never in my life have I seen somebody use that sign for the weight pounds.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, no, I did when I used to type. That was years ago, though.
Well, years ago, I worked for a bank. And it was also a number sign.
Yes, the sign in front of a number, so like number one or something like
that.
Yeah. That's when I would still use that. But I have never thought of that as the pound sign when I put it in front of a number, which is funny.
No, it was a number sign.
Yeah,
then,
it was a number
a pound sign.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you're right. It's so funny. I forgot it was a number sign.
Yeah,
it was a number sign too, because I remember it more as a number sign than as a pound
sign,
even though they said pound on my
phone. Exactly. So it's a pound sign on your phone. It still is, and it always has been to me.
Yeah.
It's a number sign when it's in front of a number, and I think we still basically call it that, the number sign.
Yeah.
The hashtag thing. From what I think I remember, British people have called it like a hash mark for quite some time, right?
Yeah. And there's those people, like when you're a harrier, you do hashes, you call yourself hashers when you do those runs and you leave hashtags.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Find
I remember those
the trail.
Guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. But this, Fletcher, leads us to an interesting little point of view here. We have a problem with that stupid little sign. In English, we call it, in American English, we call it the number sign. And then we call it a pound sign when it's used for pounds. Mm-hmm. But the British for pounds use the, you know, the pound sterling symbol, the L thing.
Well, yeah. Well, for the money, right?
Yeah.
So in the late 60s and early 70s, someone at Bell Labs said there's a problem because when you like, tell someone to, you know, input something in a computer, you will get different symbols depending on, you know, what's going on. So they want to name the symbol that we call the number symbol. They wanted to name something that everyone knows. And can you think of that wonderful name that Bell Labs coined for that symbol?
For the number symbol?
For the number symbol and for the what we would call the pound symbol. Don McPherson at Bell Labs decided we need a name for this so we don't get confused when we're inputting stuff on the computer.
Oh, sure. Okay. Is this a name we still use?
No.
Unfortunately, no.
Although, if you look it up in the OED, if you look up hash or hashtag, they have this as another, as a definition.
Okay.
And we would like to bring it back, too, Fletcher. Kathy and I love this name.
That sounds great. What is it?
Octothorpe.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. Octothorpe, because it's got like 4 points or 8 points or something.
8 points.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And he did say he wanted it to be amusing to use in lectures. And it would be. And some people say that the Thorpe was because they were trying to get Jim Thorpe's Olympic medals back from Sweden.
Oh, funny.
Or other people say it's because Thorpe is a hamlet in English, but I like the Jim Thorpe better, but whatever.
Well, the bottom line is Octothorpe is just, certainly if he wanted amusing, he got it.
Yeah.
I'll give him that.
Also, there isn't another thing called an Octothorpe, so the ambiguity is not going to be introduced there.
Exactly. But unfortunately for the world, hashtag took off instead.
Well, hashtag, especially with Twitter, did it, right?
Yeah.
Because you would put the little hash mark, the number sign, mm-hmm. in front of a word so that you could more easily search for certain terms.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And initially it came from the 15th century word hatch, which is obvious because it was like interwoven lines. Mm-hmm. I'm making the symbols with my fingers. We used to use hash in television, meaning like when you get that the snow on your screen, we called it hash.
Oh, really?
Came up. Yeah,
oh, that's interesting.
I just remembered that. You'd go, oh my God, we're going to hash here.
Sort of like chopped up.
I think it was like
pictures.
Chopped up meats.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed
flying
to interwoven
around,
strips.
Flying around through the air, chopped up meats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I still like Octothorpe better, though. I think it's really a shame.
Well, the beauty of Octothorpe is then you don't have to say number sign or hash or mm-hmm. pound. You're just always saying Octothorpe.
Because mm-hmm. they were saying here the ASCII code 96 produces a hash sign if you say it to, although they have a problem here. They said this is probably old, though. The ASCII coding in old days, if you did 96, you got a hash sign that we know in American keyboard. But if you put the PC onto British keyboard, you get a pound sign, a pound sterling sign. I wonder if that's still the case. I'm not going to try. You know me with computers. I'm not going to try it.
You'll be speaking with a British accent for the rest of the show if you change your keyboard, won't you? Well, unfortunately, not a single one of those words that we talked about starts with the letter E, but every word we talk about for the rest of the episode, I think, is going to start with the letter E. We've, of course, been doing a series on the hardest words ever found on the SATs and a few words that weren't on the SATs. And so Kathy and Ross are going to quiz me again today, I think, about the letter E.
Fletcher, we're going to start with a word, and it's time to spell, and we're going to ask you your first word, which is on the SAT list that we had, is evanescent.
Evanescent, yes. Okay, so it sounds like we're going back to a spelling bee version of this. As Ross just said, it's time to spell, so I guess I need to be spelling evanescent. Evanescent is something kind of like bubbly, right?
You're thinking of effervescent.
Oh, effervescent. Can I spell that instead?
You do not get extra credit.
Evanescent, I think, is E-V-A-N-E-S-C-E-N-T.
Very good.
Very good, Fletcher.
And so what is evanescent? I remember a band called Evanescence, but that doesn't help me.
Yes. Something that's evanescent is short-lived. It disappears. It vanishes. It's like, vroom.
Yeah.
And that's your clue, vanish, in Latin, because you're vanus, empty.
Yeah. It's funny. I want to bring something else up real quick, Kathy. Mm-hmm. You said that it was short-lived, which is interesting to me.
As opposed to short-lived.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we talk about that for a second?
Because I have to go now.
This is something.
There's a dog at the door.
To get us off track from the letter E. This is something that everybody looks at me funny for. And I know that at this point, both can be said, but it technically should be short-lived, shouldn't it? Because you're modifying the word life, not the word live.
Yes, you're absolutely right. They're both acceptable, however, yeah. As you said. Yeah. I just want to have that. But yeah, it is derived from the noun life, not not from the verb live. So it technically lived is much more correct.
Yeah.
But we let people like me, the great unwashed, are allowed to say lived, okay?
And actually, we're going to talk a little bit about later, and I think probably the next episode, we're going to talk about the why is it like, why did life become lived or lived?
Oh,
the
yeah.
F become a V. So mm-hmm. we have a, that we're going to avoid right now because we have a whole little portion of an episode to talk about that.
Well, I made sure, I guess, that discussion was not evanescent.
Yes.
Kind of kept us going. See, I know what it means now.
No, we were hoping that you would not exacerbate the situation.
Oh, right. This is always kind of a fun word to say because it always, always, always feels like you're saying it wrong. Exacerbate. It feels like it should be like exabersate. No, that feels wrong too. But exacerbate just always feels like there's something switched around there.
That's interesting.
Do you not think so?
No, I don't. But the next word, we have another word that's coming
this is
up
one that I both had problems with. Yeah.
There's another word that we have a problem with. This one I was okay with, but the next one I'm not. So go.
So when I exacerbate the situation, I sort of make it worse or I ramp it up.
Correct.
Exacer, exacerbate.
You got
correct.
It.
Correct.
You got
very
it.
Good.
Perfect.
I think you do too, Ross. I use exacerbate a lot.
I do too. I actually do.
Yeah.
And that's why both of us are like, you know, very confident pronouncers of exacerbate.
But now the next word we're not confident
we
about.
We don't use this word frequently. We know what it meant, but I don't think we ever say it in public or it's not
okay.
A bad word to say.
You ready? The word is execrable.
Oh,
execrable. I can't even say it.
No, because I think what I automatically do is say
execrable.
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 I would say
execrable. That's what I would say.
Execrable. Yeah, I don't want to do the emphasis on the first syllable.
No, I don't either.
Execrable. It makes me stop and go, never mind.
It does.
It's just detestable words.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I was about to say, doesn't this mean, you know, something that's just horrifyingly detestable or something like that.
Yes.
Do you guys,
indeed.
I know you don't say this word, which you've just displayed wonderfully for us. I don't really say it either. Do you write it? I really like this word.
I write it. I definitely write it. But I never say it out loud.
No.
And I still won't.
I'm the same way. Yeah. I still can't pronounce it. Execrable. I can't. You know,
is it the stress is on the first syllable? Execrable?
Yes.
Yeah.
Execrable. Execrable.
Execrable.
Wow. Well, anyway, E-X-E-C-R-A-B-L-E.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Not too hard to spell, not too hard to write, really hard to say. Tell me, where does the word come from? Not like derived, I assume it's Latin or something, right? But like, mm-hmm. tell me about like how the word breaks down.
It's Latin to curse or to hate.
Is the E-X a prefix?
It would be execrare in Latin. So that would be...
I just see it from excarari and execrari, to curse, to hate.
Yeah.
Ex, out, devote to. Out, sacred.
Oh, the ex is always the out in Latin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically taking out the sacred. So it does what
Kathy
was saying.
Ex, take out.
Yeah. Of like to curse, to hate. It's like from the sacro would be holy or, you know. Uh-huh. That's where you're taking it out of that.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, Kath had it, but I mean, sometimes Latin can give you fos a me, you know, fos a me, where you think it's something, but it's not that. So I was really curious about that.
Fos a me? Like fake friends?
Oh, in French, you know, false friends. You think that this is going to be the origin.
I've never used
but it's
that
not.
Term either.
I've never heard
I find it.
It
execrable.
I actually like it. Like it's like you think it's one thing, but it's actually another. Like,
yeah.
Huh. What does that mean?
Well, French is filled with those, you know, because you're basically, you think, oh, this means this, and it doesn't mean that. So, yeah. You know, automatically. So I was just curious if this was, it seemed automatically like it, but I just didn't know it. So I was curious.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, moving on.
This one, Ross and I both, we debated the pronunciation how we normally say it too, right? I say it wrong. I said ebullient.
Oh.
But it's not pronounced that way.
I do too, and we should have pronounced it correctly because there are other words that it's related to.
I've always said ebullient.
That's correct.
But Fletcher, the one word you should be able to guess from this, or you should know, is what's a gold ingot? What's
yeah,
it sometimes
bullion?
Called?
Bullion?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
As opposed to a bouillon cube.
Which is the same origin, though, because it comes from boiling.
E-B-U-L-L-I-E-N-T.
Perfect, Fletcher.
Now, if something is a bouillant, it's like, remember when I said bubbly earlier? Is it sort of like that?
You're boiling over with joy.
With joy, yeah. Okay, so exactly. It's pretty intense then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or you're bubbling with joy. Yeah.
Now, boiling over sounds sloppy. It sounds like messy joy.
I think we need an emollient to calm us down.
No. Emollient? Oh, no. Emollient. I think it's E-M-O-L-I-E-N-T. Two L's.
Yes. You got it.
Oh, good save.
I think if I would have written that down, I wouldn't have had a problem to begin with. What's an emollient? That's a healing, something that heals?
Yeah, it's something soothing when you put it on your skin. It's like
a substance.
The sun and...
Like an ointment?
Yeah, soothing effect. Now, exactly.
Speaking of all those words, what's an unguent?
It's funny that you just said unguent. I was just thinking the same thing, because unguent sounds so nice. I always love, here in Spain, in the farmacia windows, they're always selling, and I always say, look, there's more unguents. They always have these like capsules of stuff for your face all over the place.
But that's the same sort of thing. It's an ointment, really.
Right.
I mean, but it's not necessarily soothing, I think.
The difference. Unguent...
Oh.
It's just a thing.
Not necessarily soothing, but it's an ointment for something.
Yeah, the bottom line with emollient is molire, which is to soften.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is soft.
So like the emollient has like aloe in it or something.
Something.
Whereas
unguent basically...
the unguent is just a...
It's an ointment. And it comes from... Apparently it comes from the Latin, but isn't it like... I think it became butter in German or something a long time ago. I remember reading that. Well, it came from the old Sanskrit, which is to anoint, and then came into Latin, unguere, etc., from there on.
So is that related to unctuous?
Yes, Fletcher is right. I just looked it up. It comes from medieval Latin unctuosus, which is greasy.
Yeah.
And then it comes backwards into Latin from unctus, which is the act of anointing, unguere, to anoint. You're right,
that?
Fletcher. Very good. Which makes sense. An unctuous person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
it's
makes
like
a lot
sort
of sense.
It's like sort of slimy and greasy, like an ointment.
Yeah, it was perfect.
That's why it's always weird to me when I watch Top Chef or something and they talk about the food being unctuous and how they want it to be that way sometimes.
Yeah.
It always sounds really gross to me because I always thought of like an unctuous person, you know? And that's,
it's like
kinda,
a slimy,
it does.
Yucky. Yeah.
It's funny because I think of unguent as being a really nice word because we were kids. Our father was based in Egypt for a while. We lived there and we went to see like a lot of tombs and... The Egyptians would always like anoint themselves with unguents, and they were perfumey. I mean, the ancient Egyptians, they'd have like the tomb. We go into the tombs, you could see the people, like they would have like ointments all over them. They always had like unguents. And I always picture that as being like perfumey, wonderful smells, you know, which is nice. Anyway, we're going to do another word here, which I remember one of our uncles misused years ago. Enervate.
Enervate. Oh, yeah, because this doesn't really sound. I mean, it sounds like energize or something, but it's the opposite. It's the opposite.
Yep.
So like enervate is to sap strength from.
Correct.
Right.
I wonder why it sounds enter, maybe just the enter, or maybe because nerve is in there. I'm just wondering why we all seem to think it sounds like the opposite of what it is.
Yeah.
Enervate.
Perfect.
Enervate. Yeah, that one's not too hard. The definition on that one is the harder thing, I think, than the spelling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always love the fact, because we wrote about this in one of our books, that it came from the root of it, enervare, which Ross would call it, was literally cutting the sinews out of something.
Oh.
Which is like, really, talk about sapping one. Yeah. I mean, you get your sinews cut. I mean, forget about it. I'm not going anywhere for a while.
I think it was done to horses, which is horrible. I don't quite know why they did it, but they apparently did.
So let us move on. This is another one that I don't think I ever say out loud. Do you, Ross?
No. I don't.
Okay. Exigent.
Exigent. Oh, I'm not sure I really know what exigent means. I think it's E-X-I-G-E-N-T.
Perfect.
So I guess I know what it looks like. But what does it mean? Something is exigent.
Well, I'll sort of give you a slight clue. It comes from the present participle of a Latin word exigere, which means to demand, to drive out, to drive forth. X is out, and then the agere, which becomes an E with this sort of thing, would mean to do or to go. We're saying like drive out, go for
it. I don't think drive out is the best, but I think demand is better than drive out.
Okay, demand.
No, I'm still not really sure.
Okay, urgent.
If something is exigent, then it's urgent?
Yeah, it demands immediate attention. Okay. It's like quick.
But this one bothers me. This is one of those words of a Latin base that I think is utterly useless. Why can't we just say urgent?
Because exigent sounds very cool, Ross. Come on. Exigent.
Exigent does sound more important than urgent. I mean, I know urgent is urgent, like it needs to happen now, but exigent does sound more important.
Well, I'm going to extirpate all of your comments right now.
Extirpate. Okay, here's another one I don't really know.
Nor did I.
The definition of. But I think it's spelled extirpate. Is that right?
Very good. Yeah, perfect.
Yes, you got it.
That's another one. Yeah, I'm with you, Fletcher. I when we were choosing words, I said to Ross, extirpate, you know?
Does this mean like to get yourself out of like a situation or something?
Well, it's sort of interesting because it comes with X is you're out.
Uh-huh.
Actually, originally there was an S in front of the T and it's a root. So you're rooting out something.
Okay.
Pulling it out by the roots. You're X and then extirpating the roots. So you're pulling out the roots.
So I extirpate something else. I don't like extirpate myself.
No, you're extirpating. You're extirpating.
I would hope not.
I think of more like a dandy. You have a dandelion because our father had a big thing about dandelions, which I actually like. But he would extirpate dandelions in the lawn. We had to like literally dig them out.
This is a word, though. I mean, does anyone use extirpate?
Well, I think if we still have Dad around doing the dandelions, I think I would. Do you want me to extirpate them or just trim them? So I don't know.
No, seriously, I'm just looking. Oh well, actually, I'm right now looking on news, and it's extirpate is Boeing's two nightmares that its new boss must extirpate.
I just think destroy completely is a better, you know, or get rid of.
I'm sorry, this is an older one, but on CBC, extirpate this execrable race. We got twofer.
Wow.
But it seems a little slightly different from just destroy completely, at least the way you've described it. Like you have to get to the root of it.
The root of the problem, yeah.
So you got it. You have to figure out what that root is and then pull it up from there.
Yeah, actually, you're right, Fletcher. There is there's a subtle distinction. Extirpating a problem in a company means really going down to the roots and getting rid of it. You're right, I think, actually.
You can't just say eradicating.
But that seems like more top-level destroying.
Yeah,
extirpate
exactly.
Seems like you're really going into the... Yeah.
Okay, so it's a useful word if one knows what it means.
I mean, maybe yeah. And we just say root out the problem now, don't we?
Pretty much.
Yeah,
I know. I like pluck it out by the roots, though, because that's much more visceral. Yeah. Okay, this one is another one I don't think I ever say out loud, but... I don't think I've ever really used it in print either. Never mind. It's exiguous.
Exiguous. Exiguous. I have no idea what this could mean. I can imagine how it might be spelled. Exiguous.
Wow. Perfect. You did it.
Well, good. Now, if something is exiguous, well, something, X meaning out, right?
Right. Very good.
But that's as far as I can get there, I think.
Well, then we have a Latin verb, agere, which is to set into motion, to drive. Again, we go back to the agere is everywhere. To set into motion, drive forward, do, perform, And so we're doing out. So we're driving it out again.
Oh, okay.
I think it's sort of a dubious one. Let's see if you can figure it out. But that etymology isn't going to be very helpful.
I don't think it's very helpful at all.
Basically, it's extremely small. You've driven out everything, so all you got left is a tiny bit. That's it.
Exiguous?
So it means scanty.
I see.
I don't like this word at all. I mean, it's a Latin word. The Latin original Latin word is exiguus, and that's a very common word in Latin.
Hmm.
Poor, small, whatever. But I think in English, I don't think it's a particularly useful word at all.
No, I'm looking again to see if there's not much usage of it, nor should there be, as far as I'm concerned. This is like one of those words that I think you just use if you want to sound like hotsy totsy.
And here now, coming up, is an utterly useless word that is not on.
I love this one.
The Kathy found that is utterly useless unless you're a volcanologist, which I guess it might be useful for that. It's ejectamenta.
No, that's definitely not useless. I'm going to figure out ways to use that one now. Ejectamenta. I mean, eject, E-J-E-C-T.
Right.
Is it A-M-E-N-T-A?
Yeah, you got it.
Of course it is.
Ejectamenta. Yep. I mean,
the eject.
This is the stuff that gets thrown out, spewed out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's substances ejected by eruptive forces.
I love it.
Yes.
Ejectamenta.
I suppose you could use it slightly, you know, sort of ironically with someone getting sick after, you know, something.
Oh, I like that idea, Ross.
I'm absolutely going to find ways to use this word.
Yeah,
now.
Like a,
isn't
you know,
it fun?
Well, I think it was like a St. Patrick's Day. We lived in Hoboken, and the morning after, ejectamenta,
was rife. Watch it, Ross. You almost stepped into some ejectamenta there.
I like it for that reason. And I do. Fletcher, I got up for a minute and I looked up a word, and this is another related word, execrate. Here we go again. Execrate.
Execrate?
Yes.
Execrate. E-X-E-C-R-A-T-E.
Yep.
Is this, let's see, this also means to like, to eject, like to root out, doesn't it?
No.
Eject is on your mind.
No. No, we had execrable earlier, remember?
Oh, right. Detestable.
Uh-huh.
To make execrable?
To declare. It's to declare something evil.
Okay. Execrate.
Same root word as the other one. This one I can say better. Execrate.
It's a little easier.
Yeah.
I'm getting better at execrable. 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 I
did
it wrong.
You did it wrong after saying it.
This one is one that I always forget because it's really great. It's a word that I always forget to play in Scrabble. It's eunoia.
Eunoia. Woo, eunoia. What's the derivation?
It's a Greek.
Finally,
we got a Greek one in here. It means good thinking or beautiful thinking.
Is it just E-U-N-O-I-A?
You got
yes.
it.
Yes.
You got it.
Very good.
Yep.
Because that and the other one I'm just going to ask is euoi. These two are the ones that I have friends who always play in Scrabble. I play it online. And I always forget to do it because they're great because they use so many vowels. Euoi.
Yeah. Euoi. Like E-U-O-I-E?
E-U-O-I.
But E-U-O-I. Okay. E-U-O-I.
Yeah.
Very good,
those
Fletcher.
Two are so handy because of the E-U-O-I.
Wow.
I never pronounce those either.
Yeah, why would you ever say them?
No, yeah.
Except to argue that, yes, it is a word in Scrabble.
Yes, exactly. But I always say, you know, the one with all the E's and U's.
Right.
You know, that one. The one I never remember.
Okay, now, Fletcher, we're going to spell a word for you.
Okay.
And we're going to see if you can pronounce it. This is number two of our utterly useless E words.
Yes.
It is spelled E-L-E-E. M-O-S-Y-N-A-R-Y.
Yeah. Okay. Mercifully, Kathy has put this into the chat box for me so I can see it. E-L-E-E-M-O-S-Y-N-A-R-Y. Eleemosynary.
Close, but no cigar.
Okay. If you're just looking at the pieces, it looks like eleemosynary.
We had the same problem you did. We had exactly the same problem. And we should have known this because, I mean, it's related to another word, but it's eleemosynary.
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 Yeah, I added a syllable. I think I said Eleemosynary.
Yeah.
Eleemosynary. And we found actually a usage from flagpole.com, which is a magazine in Athens, Georgia, and where her mother went to school in University of Georgia. And this is what it was written. Let's see if you can guess the meaning of it now. I would not want you to think that Grady Thrasher is not a serious man. He is a retired attorney, a prize-winning children's author, a filmmaker, a philanthropist, and a partner with his wife, artist Kathy Prescott, in various eleemosynary endeavors.
No idea.
Has to do with alms. When you give alms, alms.
It's related to, because look at the sound, the L and the M. Alms,
Yeah, I mean, raising money for the church then, I guess, right? For the poor?
Not necessarily the church, just charity. It's just giving... It's yeah.
Charitable.
It's giving.
Eleemosynary is charitable. Yeah. Mm.
I like this that we found. A grammarian said, he said in reference to eleemosynary, a long and learned word like this should only be used under the stress of great need.
Yeah. Do you know the problem with that, though? The problem with it is like with ejectamenta. I have a funny, horrible feeling that I'm going to use both in the next couple of weeks. Completely by accident, too.
You think? I don't think I'm going to use eleemosynary. Ejectamenta, however, is on my list.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.